All right, the marshal may call us into order.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Smith, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Matthew Johnson presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This panel of the court today has six cases on its calendar, three of which will be submitted with oral argument and three cases without oral argument solely on the briefs. The first case set for oral argument is number A19-2026, State versus David Pegues. Counsel are familiar with our procedures and our video argument procedures, I assume. So, Mr. Lozo, you may begin. Now, did I pronounce your name correctly, Lozo?
Yes, Lozo is correct, and my client's name is David Pegues.
Pegues, thank you for that correction. All right, you may begin.
May it please the court, I'm Adam Lozo and I represent the appellant David Pegues. This case requires this court to decide whether Mr. Pegues' convictions must be reversed because the state failed to disclose to him evidence that the officers who were the central witnesses at his trial committed on-duty misconduct, including failing to competently investigate an assault, manipulating evidence during that assault investigation, and subsequently lying to police investigators about their misconduct. The district court correctly concluded that the evidence was favorable to Pegues and had been suppressed by the state. This court should reverse Pegues' convictions on two grounds. The assault conviction should be reversed because the suppressed evidence was material under Brady, and should reverse all three convictions in the interests of justice. Now, I'd like to start by emphasizing why the evidence was material to the assault charge. Whether the failure to disclose evidence is material under Brady that's not disclosed, if the failure to disclose it undermines confidence in the verdict. That standard is met if the evidence could, this is a quote, in any reasonable likelihood have affected the judgment of the jury, United States versus Bagley. The evidence that was not disclosed here would have for several reasons. The credibility of the officers was central at the trial. The officers whose credibility would have been impeached and whose investigative techniques would have been impeached were the two most important witnesses at the trial. Both officers testified that they thought they saw Pegues chase the alleged victim with a car. One of the officers testified that he believed that he had seen Mr. Pegues try to kill Mr. Richardson. One of the officers testified that he had believed that he had witnessed Mr. Pegues commit a, quote, aggravated assault. No other witnesses were called who were alleged to have witnessed this alleged assault. There was no testimony from the alleged victim. There was no testimony from Ms. Folsom. These were the only two witnesses who testified to the assault.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Judge Klopaki.
Did either officer testify that they saw the defendant's car strike the victim?
Yes, and I have a couple different answers to that question. The testimony of one of the officers, Officer Wild, I believe it is, was that he testified initially that he did see the vehicle strike the victim, and then was more equivocal about it. The other officer Grunde, testified that he believed or thought he saw the vehicle strike the victim. Now, this testimony also was represented by the prosecution in closing argument as testimony that the officers testified they saw that happen. And that's important because A, it conflicts with Mr. Pegues' testimony. It obviously is important evidence that an assault was committed, but it's not determinative, because the state argued the assault on both grounds, assault harm and assault fear. So while it's very important testimony that the officers testified that they, at the very least, believed they saw the car strike Mr. Pegues, it's not determinative of whether it was material in this case, because they both definitely testified that Mr. Pegues, they saw, this is not reflected on the video, but they saw Mr. Pegues chasing the alleged victim with the car, which obviously would constitute sufficient evidence of a fear assault as well. So the testimony of those officers regarding believing that they saw the vehicle strike Mr. Richardson is important and is something that this suppressed evidence could have impeached their credibility on. But it's also important that they both testified something that's not shown on the video, which is that they saw, according to them, Mr. Pegues chasing Mr. Richardson with this vehicle, which would be a fear assault.
So doesn't the video reveal briefly a chase, or that he was driving, he was moving in a forward direction, and there was a person, Richardson, we assume, in the headlights in front of the vehicle. Isn't that visible on the video?
So the video obviously speaks for itself, and that's one of the reasons that that the officer's testimony and the lack of impeachment material of it is very important. But my viewing of the video, I don't believe, and I think that the prosecution acknowledged in closing argument that the video itself is unclear in the moments running up to it, but the video does not show him chasing Mr. Pegues, as the officers testified to. The video shows about 3 seconds of the vehicle turning and the alleged victim appearing to either lunge in front of the vehicle or possibly be struck by the vehicle. I don't think that the video is clear in any sense, and it does not show Mr. Pegues chasing Mr. Richardson. That much is clear on the video. It shows from a distance in the dark a brief moment where something happens in the car's headlights, but I assume that the court has viewed the video and that it's not clear on what occurred, and that's part of the reason that this testimony was so important to have been impeached with the evidence that the prosecution suppressed. Because
it appears that the prosecution in closing argument acknowledged that the video was unclear and therefore focused on these two officers. Is that right?
Exactly. That's why the lack of this impeachment evidence is so important, is not only because the officers could have been impeached about their testimony as to what they saw happened, but the prosecution used, understandably, the lack of impeachment of their testimony to say their testimony shows what the video is actually depicting. So not only was impeachment important to discredit the officers, but also without it being impeached, that testimony certainly affected the way the jurors viewed that video. The officers said, here's what we saw. The prosecution acknowledged the video is somewhat unclear, but then directly told the jurors, but you heard what the officers said. And that was certainly likely to have affected the way that the jurors viewed that video and the still photos that the prosecution took from the video.
So can I ask you a question relative to the video? At the point it starts, what does the record tell us about what the officers were doing? I mean, were they already in responding to this scene?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. So I didn't know if... when you watch it and they're driving along, if they just happened to see it at that moment, or were they already responding to it?
That's what appears to have happened. They happened to be driving by and happened to have seen this, which I think also...
I see. Okay. And so the squad video was just running. Maybe it runs all the time. I'm just not
right.
familiar. Okay.
After they saw the incident, they turned on their siren and which I think automatically triggers the camera back a certain number of seconds.
Okay. So they see... They're just driving along by happenstance. They see a car coming out, veer right as someone's running. That person, you can't see a moment of impact. And then they come in, he backs up, he takes off, goes a block or two. And that's right. Just happenstance for the police seeing that.
Yeah, they were not responding to any call. The testimony is that they were just driving by. They happened to see this, which I also think calls into question, which I think shows that it would have been more impactful to impeach their credibility, because their claim is that they happened to be driving by, and not only did they see this happening, but in the dark from this distance, while they just happened to be driving by, they saw this series of events that are consistent with an assault that are not shown on the video.
What do you mean by I mean, that sounds suspicious. They happen to be driving.
No.
The fact that they just saw it makes it look a little less conspiratorial to lie about what this guy did. It looks like just like, wow, his bad luck that at the moment this was happening, they happened to see him.
Well, I don't think there's any allegation that the officer's presence on the scene was conspiratorial. But I do think that if the jury had known that these officers had a documented and confirmed history of failing to competently investigate offenses, of lying about their investigations and their misconduct later, and those things in particular, I think obviously the lying about the misconduct is the most important. It goes directly to their credibility. But I think going back to your question, The fact that they happened upon this incident occurring isn't the issue. I think the issue is that because they were not expecting it or prepared for it or watching for it, impeachment of their credibility about what they saw before their lights turned on, before the moments that are captured on the squad video, would have been more effective, because they weren't responding to a call, weren't particularly necessarily paying attention to, here's what you're responding to. So their testimony about...
What is it about their testimony then that differs from the squad video such that impeachment would have undermined
their testimony is additional to what's on the squad video. So they testified to seeing this vehicle chase Mr. Richardson. They testified to Mr. Pegues pursuing him with the vehicle, which is not shown on the squad video. They also testified both that they believed that they saw him being hit, which, as we said, is equivocal on the squad video. And it's very important that they also testified that each officer testified that they believed they had seen an assault occur. One of the officers testified that he believed that Mr. Pegues had tried to kill Mr. Richardson and that he was afraid he would try to hurt someone else. The other officer testified directly that he believed an aggravated assault had occurred. So their testimony is additional to what
I see. And if were they testifying that they saw something outside of the parameters of what we see on a squad? In other words, when you say they saw someone that he was chasing, do they claim to have seen something more than what was on the squad, like some earlier time period than was out in the squad?
That's video? Precisely right. The squad video only shows a couple seconds of this incident. It obviously shows him beat him after the incident, the police pursuit and arrest and everything of him. But of the incident itself, the squad video only shows a brief moment from a distance in the dark where the vehicle turns and where Mr. Richardson either flies in front of, lunges near, or is struck by the video.
Right. I understand what the video shows. I watched it several times. I'm just wondering whether they testified, oh, and before our video started, here's what we saw that's not on the video. It was preliminary to the start of the video, but I independently saw something that you don't see on a video. Yes. Or if it's just their testimony about what they think they're seeing on a video, as opposed to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. So there is their testimony that both officers testified that they saw Mr. Pegues in his vehicle pursuing the alleged victim, chasing the alleged victim.
That supports the fear assault charge, is that it?
That supports the fear assault, and of course it would also be relevant to intent to commit the harm assault as well. And that testimony, that does not appear on the video, so that is additional to what's on the video. They are saying that we saw this happen. We saw him chase Mr. Richardson with the car. That's not on the video. The jurors had to choose whether to believe that or not, and they were not told that these police officers had committed multiple lies to other police officers in the course of an investigation. And I think that it's also critical to realize what the standard of review here is. In the Supreme Court has been very clear that the standard of review is not whether the jury might have believed this or whether the evidence was sufficient. Mr. Pegues' conviction must be reversed if the failure to disclose all of this evidence that shows that these officers had a history of lying, had a history of lying to police in investigations, had a history of misconduct, if that evidence had in any reasonable likelihood could have affected the judgment of the jury, that his conviction needs to be reversed. The Supreme Court has directly, and I cited this in my reply brief, has directly rejected the contention that if the evidence was otherwise sufficient, it's not material. That's not the test. And I think that given that we've had to spend so much time in the argument talking about what does the video show, was their testimony corroborated by it, I think that in and of itself shows that this significant impeachment evidence certainly could reasonably be taken to put the case in a different light, that the jury might have taken it in a different light. Certainly undermines confidence that the verdict would have been the same if the jury had been told about all of this evidence that undermines the credibility of the police officers. I think it's also important to remember that
without the officers' testimony, is there anything that would support a fear assault?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. The officers testified that they saw that happening, but I don't believe there is. And I think it's also important to remember that one of the things that Brady cases have identified as being crucial to whether the suppressed evidence was material is whether there were other effective means to impeach the testimony of the witness. In cases where it's been deemed not to be material, that's been pretty common. Well, this particular conviction wasn't disclosed, but you impeached him via these other convictions, things like that. Here we're dealing with police officers. Jurors are naturally going to be more inclined to absent any impeachment evidence, credit the testimony of a police officer. Here there was substantial and significant impeachment evidence that would have directly impeached their credibility, and Mr. Pegues was simply not informed that that evidence existed. I think that that evidence, particularly in the context of a police officer, is critical and material.
As it happened, did defense counsel try to impeach or challenge the officer's observations in any way?
Defense counsel pointed out, if I can go beyond just for a few seconds here.
Oh, yes, of course.
Thank you. Defense counsel pointed out, this is dark, did point out that one of the officers had said previously that, or at least asked the officer about having allegedly said that he was pretty sure he saw an assault rather than that he had seen, or pretty sure, excuse me, that he had seen the vehicle strike Mr. Richardson rather than saying on the stand that he saw that. So there was some effort to impeach by saying, well, are you really sure? Wasn't it dark? Wasn't it difficult to see? But obviously that's very different than impeachment by direct evidence that these officers have lied to police very, very recently.
Thank you, Mr. Lozo. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Mr. Raggetts, on behalf of the state. You're muted, Mr. Raggetts. Why don't you unmute and start over, please?
I didn't realize I'd been muted there. Sorry. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thomas Raggetts. I'm an assistant Ramsey County attorney, and I represent respondents, state of Minnesota, in this matter. I intend to focus this morning on the Brady issue and the related interests of justice issue, but I'd like to start by just very briefly addressing the other two substantive issues and what the reply brief says about them. On the order for protection issue, appellant says he was prejudiced because the order for protection violation evidence went to his motive, but the jury didn't hear any details about the order of protection violation or even who it involved. And as Judge Diamond pointed out, the motive evidence came from appellant's own testimony. That's on page 16 of the addendum. And then on the defense of another issue, what happened here is essentially the same as shooting someone in the back while they're running away. You don't get a defense of another instruction on that unless the evidence supports it. And even if you look at the evidence here in the light most favorable to defense, there is no evidence that the victim faced imminent death or great bodily harm. It's undisputed that appellant was driving away from her, or running away from her when this happened. So the Pollard case appellant cites in his reply brief doesn't say you always get this instruction regardless of the facts. And here there are no facts regarding death or imminent great bodily harm. And that's why Judge Diamond didn't err in not giving a defense of another instruction. And even if he did, any error was harmless. And then on the interest of justice issue, you only get to this issue if you find any Brady error here was harmless. If there was prejudice from a Brady violation, then that's the end and we go back for another trial. But if any error here was harmless, so the trial was ultimately fair, the only basis for reversing here would be appellant's argument that you should do so to send a message to prosecutors. But this court has said many times, including just last year, that's supervisory authority. We don't exercise that. We are an error-correcting court. So appellant will be free to ask the Supreme Court to exercise supervisory authority and reverse to send a message.
Why is this a supervisory issue as opposed to simply a violation of the rules of disclosure?
Well, if there was prejudice from that, Your Honor, then we lose. I grant you that. But appellant's argument is, even if there was no prejudice here, so normally you would affirm, you should still reverse in the interests of justice. And Judge Diamond rejected that, and that does not fit within your case law. But again, appellant will be free to ask the Supreme Court to do that. And that gets us then to the Brady issue, and of course, whether there was a deliberate Brady violation here. There's three main points I want to make in the Brady issue, and I'll start with the harmless error point, since that's most of what's been discussed this morning. The Judge Diamond didn't err in finding that any error here was harmless. And I'm not arguing that it's because it was sufficient evidence, it was harmless. That's a straw man. I've never argued that.
Are we bound by Judge Diamond's finding on that issue?
No, but it's persuasive and his logic is persuasive. And he said the testimony of officers Wild and Grunold was corroborated to a very significant degree by Exhibit 22, the squad video, and the stills, and the of another officer's body camera that shows the victim on the ground in obvious pain. So yes, the video does not show the actual moment of impact, but it also
can
show-
I ask, and I suppose this is clear, but I just wanted to be sure. So neither the girlfriend nor the victim testified? Is that why we don't have that to corroborate?
Right. I think it's fair to assume that we had some uncooperative witnesses here, but we do have body camera from an unrelated officer, not one of these two, showing the victim on the ground in pain. And appellant's story here was...
Was there anything more to show? So he was in pain. Was there anything? And that you're arguing shows that he was in fact hit by the car, right?
Right. That he
didn't that's what that out. Goes to. Was there any other evidence to show that he was hit by the car? I mean, well, I don't know. What did it say about injuries or what happened to him or anything? Or was it just the officer's testimony that he was injured and you infer then that he was hit by a car?
What we have here is the officer's testimony, the video, the squad video, and the body camera video. And I think it's important to consider this in light of appellant's claim about what happened here. Because appellant's claim is essentially that this victim tried to commit suicide for some inexplicable reason. He just lunged over and in front of the car. And the video doesn't support that. That's the claim here that appellant was making.
When did the body cam officer get there and find the guy in pain? And I guess that's all we know, that he was in pain. I don't know if that record tells us anything about his injuries or what happened to him. So when relative to what we see on this squad, does a body camera officer come?
I believe it's not too many minutes later. I mean, obviously the officers called it in, other officers showed up. He's still there where he was shown on the body camera video on the ground. And it says that he's in obvious pain on the ground. So appellant's story is, well, the pain I guess must have been from him jumping through the air and landing on the ground because I never hit him with my car. But that's a fairly preposterous story and it doesn't fit very well with the squad video as Judge Diamond found. And Judge Diamond watched the squad video on a big screen with the prosecutor narrating it and explaining everything that happened here. And yes, you review that de novo, but there is no evidence that supports appellant's story. And that's important here. And the other important
thing
here-
Mr. Regis, before you go on to the next part. So on the body cam video, we hear an officer saying to either another officer or saying to the woman, he was hit by the car or he was hit by the vehicle, something like that. Is it your position that that is substantive evidence that may be considered for the truth of the matter asserted?
Your Honor, I don't think there's any evidence that that officer saw what happened. He is presumably repeating what he has been told by the other officers who have gone off to chase appellant as he fled in his vehicle. So I'm not arguing that that supports that what's heard on the body camera supports my argument. I'm arguing what's shown on the body camera video of him in obvious pain that seems to go beyond just falling down after you've jumped. And that's what Judge Diamond found out. If you look at pages 5 and 7.
Does the officer describe the quote obvious pain? I mean, pain to what part of the body, any detail?
I don't think the officer described that orally. What Judge Diamond found, and this is on page 5 of my brief, is that the body camera shows the victim on the sidewalk in an obvious pain. So that's really all we have here. But again,
all the testimony showed. I mean, you're reading the front, but that's all the. So there was no like medical attention or anything like that. I mean, it can hurt to fall down.
It could, yes. And that was appellant's theory that he just for some reason decided to throw himself in front of my car while he was running. But that's a pretty preposterous theory and it's not supported by any motive, any evidence from the body camera, from the squad video. And I think the other thing that's important to consider here is what the cross-examination would have been. There isn't evidence here that these officers in multiple investigations or for multiple offenses botched the investigation. What happened here is the officers showed up at a scene, one of their former colleagues was there, and they turned their body cameras away and didn't act when they should have, and then lied to cover it up. That's very different than framing an innocent person, which is exactly what appellant is claiming here. The officers were driving. They happened to see an SUV going rapidly through a park where no SUV should be driving, especially not that speed. And they happened to see this occur. And appellant's theory is on the spot, they decided to lie and claim that an assault had occurred when it hadn't. And I do want to also point out, I just looked over my notes from the prosecution's closing argument. I don't believe the prosecutor argued assault fear in closing. And what the jury found was guilt of assault with a dangerous weapon. So the focus here has always been, did appellant hit him with his car or did he not? That was the prosecutor's argument. He hit
Mr. Raggetts, I recall that the prosecutor did argue both assault harm and assault fear, that was part of the argument.
He may have, Your Honor. I have not looked
at the and the court instructed accordingly, did it not?
I don't know, Your Honor. That's not an argument that appellant made in his brief or his reply brief, that the fear part of it complicated the analysis here. And I haven't reread the original transcript. I've just looked at my notes. I do know the jury found him guilty of assault with a dangerous weapon, which would indicate they believe that the car was used to assault the victim here.
But that could be either assault harm or assault fear, right?
I suppose it could. I don't think that was certainly not the focus of the prosecutor's argument. The focus of the prosecutor's argument and rebuttal was, look at the video, contrast it with his story of an attempted suicide, and it just doesn't add up. The prosecutor relied quite heavily on the video, and that's why Judge Diamond found harmlessness here. And the video just doesn't support this theory that for some unknown reason, the victim decided to jump in front of the car. So that's point number one on the Brady issue. The second point is there is no conspiracy here. There is no undisclosed, don't ask, don't tell agreement where the Ramsey County Attorney's Office told the St. Paul Police Department, we don't want to hear about incomplete investigations. You've got the Brady agreement in front of you in the addendum. It says we need internal affairs reports, even if they're private data. Now, it doesn't expressly say, and by the way, that includes incomplete reports. But there's no case law that says Brady includes that, that's binding on this court.
Mr. Raggetts, can I interrupt you before you go into that? So upon reading your brief, I had the impression that you were challenging only the issue of materiality on Brady, that you were not challenging the other requirements of the Brady doctrine.
Your Honor, my argument here is, partially, there's no bad faith or blatant violation here such that interest of justice requires a reversal, even if the error is harmless. But I do point out in my brief that if we are going to be required to disclose reports that are not complete, we need guidance on where the line is to be drawn. And there isn't any guidance in binding case law right now. If you look at appellant's reply brief, the best he could come up with is cases from intermediate appellate courts at the federal level that don't include the Eighth Circuit.
Counsel, excuse me. I want to make sure I understand, because I might have misunderstood. When you say you asked for it, even if it's private data, and now you're suggesting, though, that it wasn't complete. In other words, did Ramsey County not get from the police what it should have gotten under its request? Or is it correct that they did not provide that because, notwithstanding the fact that there had been a report, I think, finalized in March, it wasn't yet the basis for termination until later? Which one is it? Was it incomplete or was it? So it shouldn't have been provided, or it should have been provided to the Ramsey County?
Your Honor, it was incomplete, and I'll get to that in a second. It wasn't provided to us. That's undisputed that we did not know about it. Whether it should have been provided is essentially a question for this court. There's no case law.
Should have been provided under your request, under what you understood they would be providing. I just got a little confused by your saying that you ask for even private data, and then you say that it was incomplete. I didn't know whether you...
Well, that's essentially the problem here is if this had been a complete report that had gone into his personnel file, it would have come to us and would have been disclosed whether it was public or private. But it's incomplete in the sense that, and this is...
What do you mean by incomplete? I thought the report was completed. There's some delay that takes place before it ends up somewhere where it's supposed to be.
Yes, Your Honor. That's what I was just starting to say.
What was incomplete about it?
That's what I'm trying to answer, Your Honor.
I'm sorry.
The July 31st transcript sets out that the report did not go to the Police Civilian Internal Affairs Review Commission until May 30th, after this trial.
It's only incomplete because it hadn't gone through the whole processes of where it ultimately is supposed to go. But the investigation and whatever else about the report was completed?
Your Honor, it's like a draft of an opinion. When an opinion is written, it is not complete until the other judges sign off on it. Here, it had to go to the Internal Affairs Commission and it had to be approved by the chief. Either of those could presumably have said, you need more information on this. You didn't look at this. Go back and work on it some more. It wasn't finished and it didn't go into his file. That's why it wasn't disclosed. Once it was in his file, per our agreement that's set out in the addendum, we would have disclosed it even if it included private data.
But and you don't think you have any obligation to disclose that this procedure is going on?
That's the question for this court. There isn't any binding case law that says the mere existence of an investigation has to be turned over. Again, appellant has cited intermediate federal appellate courts, nothing from this court, the Minnesota Supreme Court, the Eighth Circuit, the U.S. Supreme Court. And if that's what we're supposed to do, we will, of course, do it. We take our obligations very seriously. But we need to know what to tell the police. Do they have to disclose the mere fact that there has been a complaint, that there have been notes taken about the complaint, that there's a first draft of a report? Where does the line get drawn? And that's not a question this court needs to answer here because of the harmlessness of any error, as Judge Diamond found. But I do want to defend my office against the notion that we told the police department, don't tell us about things like this. We don't want to know. There's nothing like that in the record. The record shows the agreement is give us internal affairs reports, even if they include private data. And if we need to amend that and spell out that you need to tell us once an investigation's even been begun, even if it isn't complete, we will, of course, do that. But we were not on notice that that was something we needed to do here. And in any event, as Judge Diamond found, any error here was harmless.
Dr. Raggetts, I have a question. I'm jumping around a bit, and maybe other judges want to pursue this issue further. But I think you had a footnote in your brief saying that even if defense counsel had gotten the investigation materials about the officer's other misconduct, they would not have been able to explore it because they would not be permitted under the rules of evidence to impeach with extrinsic evidence. But it was a footnote, and you didn't go further with it. It left some questions. But I'm wondering if that is still your argument, that even if they had the documents, they would not have been able to use it in the manner that is basically the assumption underlying appellant's argument. Now, I know you're out of time, but go ahead and answer that question.
Thank you, Your Honor. My point in that footnote was just that under the rules, you clearly cannot impeach with extrinsic evidence. I did not argue they couldn't have asked about it. They could have said, isn't it true that you covered up for a colleague and then lied about it?
They have to be put on some kind of notice that there's an issue here for them to even make that kind of inquiry.
Right. And my argument is, even if they had made that kind of inquiry, it would not have led to a different result, as Judge Diamond found, again, because it's not a situation where they previously framed an innocent person or botched an investigation. They covered up for a colleague, and we've got the squad video. So I don't deny that they could have been cross-examined with questions, but they couldn't have been cross-examined with extrinsic evidence. And of course, you can't impeach someone, a defendant, with just an arrest. You have to impeach them with a conviction. So there is a question about how far you can go in impeaching someone with mere allegations that haven't been verified or haven't led to a final report or conclusion.
This is important, I think, because it underlies, appellant's entire argument. But just to be clear, so I think what you're saying is they could not have used the documents as exhibits during that impeachment, but they could have asked any number of questions. Isn't it true that you were investigated by an internal affairs investigation? The finding of that was that you engaged in misconduct? Isn't it true you were fired for that? Isn't it true that the investigator said, perhaps reading a quote from the document, I mean, am I right that defense counsel could have done all of that without using the report as an exhibit?
Well, Your Honor, at the time of trial, they hadn't been fired yet. And in fact, the chief hadn't even signed off on the report yet. So yes, they could have been asked.
Okay, you're right. So to revise my question just so that they could have been asked about everything that had occurred thus far.
Yes.
But there had been an investigative report by the investigator. And I understand that at that point in time, that was simply that investigator's conclusions. It hadn't been ratified, so to speak, by superior officers, but they could have been examined about what the investigator had concluded, correct?
Right. And they could have said, we disagree with that and no disciplinary action has been taken on that. And it's not a complete investigation or report. And then the defense would have been sort of stuck with that since you can't use extrinsic evidence. But even if these officers had been fully cross-examined and their credibility had been damaged, Judge Diamond concluded that wouldn't have mattered here because appellant's story was rebutted by the video evidence, the squad and the body camera. Appellant's story was fairly preposterous about
except that the jury, the state in final argument acknowledged that the video wasn't all that clear, and that they shouldn't instead rely upon these officers' observations and testimony. Now, if this officer's observations and testimony is seriously impeached, isn't it at least probable that the result might be different?
Judge Diamond didn't think so, and I agree with Judge Diamond because the video doesn't show appellant throwing himself up.
Oh, but that's the issue. We have to decide whether or not that probability exists.
Right.
And we're not bound by what the trial judge felt about that issue.
No, that's true, Your Honor. But I think his conclusion is correct that the video does not in any way support appellant's attempted suicide theory here. And that's where if we didn't have the squad video, we'd be in trouble. But with the squad video and the body camera and the fact that this cross-examination would have been about something completely unrelated that doesn't show any sort of pattern of botching investigations, that's where Judge Diamond correctly
What troubles me here is the prosecutor's really focus on these two officers in closing argument, and then in rebuttal, the same thing. So that it was the officer's testimony was highlighted twice and was pointed to by the, highlighted for the jury as being really critical information here. And if in fact impeachment would have suggested that these officers were not accurate, it just seems to me that what follows is that a different result would be probable.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree for two reasons, and that's because the squad video rebuts appellant's argument, even if it doesn't directly show the impact here, and because at most the jurors would have heard these officers helped a former colleague out and then lied about it. That does not give them a motive to lie about appellant committing an assault or to frame him for some reason. So I'm well over my time, and I think I'm just repeating myself here, but unless this court has additional questions, I'll simply ask that you affirm Judge Diamond. Thank you.
It appears there are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Raggetts. Mr. Loza, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. Just for clarity of the record, the court is correct. In closing argument, the prosecutor did, this is on page 37 of the closing argument, argue directly to the jury that he doesn't even need to have contact. He doesn't even need to make contact for it to be an assault because the intent to cause fear is sufficient. The court is also correct that the jury was instructed on assault fear. So that's part of what makes this failure to disclose the credibility of the impeachment evidence so important is that even if the jurors looked at what is an equivocal squad video and said, well, we can't tell if he actually hit him and if he actually hurt him, the officers said that they saw him chasing him with his car. That's assault fear. And if that's the form of reasoning, if it's even reasonably probable that that's the form of reasoning that could have been followed, then the evidence is material. I do also
doesn't the alternative language in the instruction make it, I guess, to me this cuts in favor of the state. The fact that guilt, the jury could have found guilt merely based on assault fear and not based upon assault harm. The striking of Mr. Richardson with the vehicle is not essential to the verdict of guilt because merely putting somebody in imminent fear of bodily harm is sufficient. Doesn't that cut in favor of the state?
No, because there's no evidence on the squad video of any act to put him in fear of bodily harm. And Mr. Pegues testified he never did anything of the kind. The officers are the ones who testified that they saw him chasing him with a car. There's no chasing of the car on the video. So if that was the basis for the verdict, an assault fear rather than assault harm, it was based entirely on the officer's testimony of what they saw, which would make the evidence even more prejudicial, the non-disclosure of the evidence. I do want to also,
Judge Smith, I think you're muted in terms of I hear your lips moving, or see your lips moving, but I don't hear you.
So, counsel, can I just ask, what do you think this squad video show? Him, the victim, chasing the vehicle? Like,
no, it doesn't show anything. Said,
what is it? It shows a human and a car
going. It shows a car turning. It shows the headlights striking on a person who moves in front of the car in some manner. And Mr. Pegues testified that the guy lunged in front of his turning car. The police officers testified that they saw Mr. Pegues chase the guy, turn the car into him, and strike him.
So Mr. Pegues is, like, finding that credible seems to be necessary for the jury to acquit in a way, right?
Not at all.
Because you see the two together in a way that's not normal or right. Like, it's going fast. It's a sharp turn. There's a guy running. I mean, unless you know, someone happened to be running and then a car was driving. I mean, they're engaged with each other somehow. And it just seems like it's either the car's chasing the guy or the guy's chasing the car. I don't know what the alternative is.
Two responses to that. First of all, obviously the jury does not need to decide that Mr. Pegues is credible and to be believed to decide that the state hasn't proven that Mr. Pegues committed assault beyond the reasonable doubt, which is the question. It is not whether the jury, it is certainly not true legally that the jury has to decide Mr. Pegues is credible to decide that the state hasn't carried its burden. But I'd also want to point out that that's another reason that the failure to disclose this evidence is prejudicial in this case, is because the officers came up on the stand, testified, we saw him chase Mr. Richardson with the car, we saw him hit Mr. Richardson with the car, and then everything else happened. Mr. Pegues, at that point, without any method of impeaching the officers, believing that that's not what happened, had to testify. If Mr. Pegues had any means of impeaching the officers, his trial tactics could have and very well might have been different. He may have chosen not to exercise his right to testify and to rest on the extremely damaging impeachment evidence of the officers' lack of credibility about what they saw. The entire fact that Mr. Pegues testified, which is being relied on by the state to argue that any error here was harmless, was a direct result of the fact that there was no impeachment evidence to impeach the officers which was a result of the fact that evidence, which was in possession of the police, which was subject to a final report that was completed in March, that was signed off on, contrary to the state's characterization, by the internal affairs investigator, by the internal affairs commander prior to Mr. Pegues's trial. I think it's very important to recognize the importance of that evidence and the requirement to disclose it.
Mr. Lozo, I was going to say earlier that your rebuttal time was used up in answering, I think, judges' questions. And if you have particular points that are directly in response to Mr. Raggetts's argument, I think you should have the opportunity to tell us about that. I know that Mr. Raggetts went over too, again, in response to judges' questions. But anyway, so continue, if you wish, with additional rebuttal that you think is important for us to understand.
I've got plenty to say, Your Honor, but I'll just finish that last point, and then I'm more than happy to please answer any questions the court still has, which is that the characterization that this report somehow wasn't subject to disclosure because it was not finalized, A, has no support in the law. The question under clear and repeated Supreme Court case law is not whether a report about evidence was finalized prior to trial. The question is whether the evidence is favorable to the defendant. The evidence here is all of misconduct and lies. The evidence is not a report. But also on that point, even though whether this report was finalized is irrelevant to the question, the fact is that the report was completed by the investigators in March. It was signed off on, it was approved and signed off on by the Internal Affairs Unit Commander. And as Mr. Raggett said, given to the Civilian Affairs Commission after that, but it was approved by the IAU commander before Mr. Pegues's trial. So to the extent that this report, which had been completed, documented, and then sent to the commander, had to be finalized, which it did not. It also had been signed off on by the unit commander and sent up after that. So the question's irrelevant, but it is important to recognize the report was completed in March and was signed off on by the unit commander prior to Mr. Pegues's trial in May. So with that, I would love to answer any questions that the court has about anything.
It appears that all the questions have been asked and answered. Thank you, Mr. Lozo. Thank you, Mr. Raggetts. The case was well argued, and the case is submitted. We will issue our opinion within 90 days.